Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, host of The Big Story, Canada's longest-running daily news podcast. For 6 years now, we've been telling one story a day, every one of them about something that matters to Canadians. This spring, though, we're going deeper. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt, the inside story of Ontario's Greenbelt scandal. From political games to stag and doe parties, endangered species, RCMP investigations, and Las Vegas massages, you will hear the full story straight from the people who broke it. The Big Story presents Pay Dirt. New episodes every Monday starting April 22nd, and you can get them all by following The Big Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Controversial subjects with the facts can be tense, but we are a sub-science here to make things make sense.
Today we are talking about the midlife crisis. Are we in one? What does science have to say about your brain whilst in one, your brain in midlife, and whether other animals also go through the same thing?
Dun, dun, dun.
Are we in a midlife crisis?
Well, we'll save that for the another part of the podcast where we talk about it. But the answer is yes.
Did just buy a Porsche. I'm kidding.
Oh my God. You know Porsche. What? I have to update people.
What?
It hasn't come yet, but I finally found a clock alarm radio.
That's whoa. Beautiful,
and it should be here tomorrow.
Is it vintage?
It's not vintage. No, but it's like a, it's taken me so long to find something that's just not like an ugly ass clock. And
so explain to the people where you got it.
It's a brand called Tivoli or Tivoli. And actually, if he's listening, our friend Gavin actually found it and sent it to me on Instagram.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God. But then, yeah, so it actually has a clock. It can.
We got quite a few DMs about this issue.
Yes. So, oh, we did?
Yeah, on ASAP
Science. I didn't
see many those. People saying they have found similar issues with not being able to find a nice looking alarm clock.
Yeah, because it's
that
easy to
radio.
Find a beautiful radio that's like even pretty inexpensive, but it's hard to find one that has like
no, you weren't wrong. You weren't not Googling.
And
well.
I know people had asked, so hopefully, because some people were like, can you let me know if you find something? And so now I have, and it's called like the Model 3. Not to be confused with a Tesla car. Every time I would look it up, that's what would come up.
Model 3.
Tivoli Model 3 VT or something like that. And I'm very excited and hopefully I can.
It's not here yet though, so we'll get full review.
It's not a full review.
Because you just want to make sure, you know, all the parts are in place.
That's
everything's
true.
Right with what you ordered.
You know where I got it from?
Where?
Very Canadian. Because it was very hard to get in Canada. Like no store, not even the main company would send it to
no
Canada.
No one out of Tivoli.
Babler Radio. You know those commercials?
Babler Radio.
So not sponsored, but thank you so much for being the literal only place in this entire damn country that had one of them.
I was just at Babler and it's not there. So I'm like, what's Babler Radio stand for?
Oh.
It probably originally was there.
No, when I looked it up, it's there.
Oh, whoa.
Maybe it's not on the main floor or something.
Wait, 502,000.
Anyway, if you're not from...
Wait,
no, that's
what?
Not...
No.
They just... It's for everyone who's not from Toronto, it's just like electronics.
But there was a jingle.
It wasn't like, Babler Radio.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. The Tivoli Model 3 is here.
Anyway, just thought I'd bring that up.
Okay, let's get into what we learned this week.
Okie doke.
Oh, what did we learn this week?
Well, this week I learned you can get a Tivoli Model 3 Babler Radio.
It was really expensive in Canada, just so you know. Yeah, in the States, it was like more normal.
Mitch
price.
Just got YouTube money, y'all. Just I let just, that
I
be known.
I was desperate. I honestly been looking for so long. It's the only thing I could find.
Sounds like
so
a Italian.
What did you actually learn?
Oh, wait. I just some COVID research coming out there. We should be all thinking about it at all times.
Uh-huh.
This is in 16 macaque monkeys, which I'm so sorry, macaque monkeys, but we have been obliterating you during this pandemic trying to figure out how it works. So, yeah, we were spritzing them with the virus.
Well, they did that to some humans, too, voluntarily.
Yeah, that's true. And thank you to all the humans who did the vaccine trials. You did really great. We all got our vaccines, except for some people. Yeah, they did not appreciate the fact that you put your lives on the line to save us all. But anyways, moving on. So macaque monkeys are one of the, like, you can think of as the closest to humans when we're doing a lot of the studies for COVID, and they spritzed them with aerosolized COVID virus in small amounts to large amounts and really did find that low doses of the virus would have the macaque monkeys start to build an antibody response, and they would find the virus in the respiratory tract, but they would have no symptoms. Whereas as they went higher and higher, the higher the dose, same thing. You'd get antibodies and you'd get the virus, but you would have severe symptoms. So it's just like...
like the dose exposure.
Yeah, just another study about viral load. Yeah, which is something that I find fascinating. I feel like this pandemic has really made me do a lot of research about viral load. Mm-hmm. And it's very intuitive.
It's actually a term that I didn't really know before the pandemic, to be honest. And it seems so obvious and intuitive in some ways. But it was really interesting to learn that and be like, yeah, oh yeah, I guess that makes sense that even with a regular cold or flu, if you sneeze, like, of course, the amount that gets on you or someone else might implicate how severe you
get. Yeah, and whether or not your immune system is like, holy shit, overload, or is like, oh, I can handle this.
Yeah.
Like, it's very intuitive and it seems a little too obvious, but I agree. Like,
but obviously not.
I started learning about viral load also during this pandemic, and I was like, oh my God. And I remember what's his name? But he wrote The Gene. It's like the most famous, like, genetics book that I love. The name
Richard Dawkins?
No. Oh. He has a long last name. Whatever. I'm just going to butcher it. But he wrote for The New Yorker like really early on. He's like, we have to learn about viral load. And I remember just being like, damn, he's onto something. And now there's just more evidence backing up.
Evidence
and
it's like, because I feel like that conversation was starting to happen, but that's cool to see it actually be quantified.
And it's just 16 macaque monkeys. You know, Siddhartha Mukherjee. Siddhartha Mukherjee.
I don't know. Indian. I don't know how to help you. I was staring at
But people know who he is. He's so famous. He's a staff writer at The New Yorker. Anyways, he was the first person to inform me. And then, macaque monkeys.
Cool.
Viral load. Things to think about while you're out in the world, vaccinated, trying to figure out your safety levels.
Yeah. Speaking of loads, my
hot
study was about Viagra.
Oh, I'm horny.
So, and like, speaking of midlife crisis, I thought maybe this played a role. So
boners.
I thought, how perfect. But recently, Viagra became more affordable in Sweden. So I guess the patent rights ended, which meant that other companies can start to make it. And the price has dropped like 75%.
Yeah, screw Pfizer.
does Pfizer own Viagra?
Yeah, I thought so.
Oh, I didn't know that. Anyway, they measured a very significant drop in suicides since that has happened.
Shut up. That's such bull. Part.
No, Gregory Brown. You
no
can't just
way.
Hate everything about men. Like, we can look out for the well-being of men as well.
Oh my God, I love it. Okay, fine. Maybe it's the boners.
So basically, they used the age group of 50 to 59 for a couple reasons. One was that obviously is like... they saw a significant increase in the amount of Viagra being bought by that age group.
Yeah, fair.
And is the age group that is the highest suicide rate in society. Yeah.
50 to 59-year-old
Yeah,
men.
I didn't know that either. So in like...
That totally relates
to America,
our
England, whatever, it's like 50 to 59 is when people are most likely to commit suicide.
Yeah, that midlife is
Because I
would have
thought it was like teens or something. Like, I would have thought... that
that's gonna be our own
so even basically there since that has happened. So I think Viagra, it was like they measured between 2013 and 14, which is when it was patented, and I think since then they've now measured, like, you know, 2014 2018 is where the study was looking at, I think. And they found on average 65 fewer suicides each month since the price drop. And this is in Sweden, so like not like a huge country, but 65 a month. And it was basically, the study was looking into, you know, how the lack of sexual intimacy might be linked to depression in men specifically. Because obviously this was like looking primarily at men.
Oh my God, it's going to be weird when you can't get a boner.
Yeah, I mean, like, it doesn't happen to everyone, hard. But yeah, it would change. Would it would change your perspective of yourself.
Yeah,
I'm sure. I mean, it's like any signs of aging, right? Like if you if you love running, and there's going to be an age where maybe it's actually worse for you to run because you're hurting your body, like, or even like balding, or all these like signs of aging that I think are really hard emotionally and mentally.
It's like, but I already am balding and I already can't run because my feet hurt all the time. It's like I'm like really gonna suck when I can't get a boner. You, like I'm like, does this have anything to do with 33-year-olds, which I am?
Oh my God, no. Oh my God. I mean, maybe. But ultimately, it was just the research suggested that a healthy sex life can offer some protection against depression.
Okay.
As well as like there's many other benefits of a healthy sex life.
Yeah.
But this was just talking about that, particularly in men.
Wow. Okay. So lift the patent on Viagra, people.
Yeah. I guess that might just be only in Sweden. Like, I guess that hasn't happened everywhere else.
I love it. It's like, obviously Pfizer's like the worst, but I love how during the pandemic, I'm like, Pfizer, babe, let's get
Don't
vaccinated.
They have like really weird new names for the vaccines now?
So that people aren't saying the brand name?
Yeah, it's like both Pfizer and Moderna. Actually. Like, I think Moderna got like SpikeVax or something like that. But Pfizer's is so weird.
Don't
it's like
call
Kronorniki
it...
or something like
oh
that.
Oh my God. Don't call it even SpikeVax. It's too violent. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds scary.
I guess, but it's helping you make the spike protein.
No, I know. But don't you think it should be like, nice, calm, feel better vibe?
True.
Like SpikeVax? It's like, sounds like a knife. Anyways, that's just my opinion.
Okay, well, why don't we take a little break and then...
What you learned this week was very midlife crisis. Midlife crisis.
Yeah, I forgot which one. Okay, we'll be back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Feeling imperfect, insecure, or inadequate? I certainly do from time to time. How do you show kindness, self-acceptance, gratitude, and compassion to yourself every day? This is such a cool thing. I need to tell you about it because I'm also just really excited because I've been using it for about 30 days now. Anyways, mental health is a journey, and Switch Research delivers expert guidance along the way. Their mission is to provide you with effective, easily accessible mental health resources to help you become a happier, more resilient you. So I've been using this journal that they sent us. It makes me do gratitude lists. I do it in the morning. It's just so easy to do when you just have this thing in front of you. It's kind of like a little workbook. I'm obsessed. But Switch Research has helped tens of thousands gain more confidence with their 91-day evidence-based self-love journal. They partner with psychologists, clinical therapists, researchers, psychiatrists, and other specialists who have years of experience under their belt to guide you through their self-love journey. Transform your negative thoughts into self-love by using our code ASAP20 today at switchresearch.org to get 20% off your purchase. So again, that's ASAP20 at switchresearch.org to get one of these journals or get 20% off your first purchase.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've been listening to Side Note, you know, here at This Fine Podcast that we love to talk about therapy. We're always bringing the new insights we learn from therapy to the pod. That's why today we want to talk about BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your personal needs and match you with a licensed professional therapist that you can start communicating with within under 48 freaking hours. Yeah, I stuttered. It was that quick. The canceling is done securely online and is available worldwide. Not only can you schedule weekly video or phone sessions, skipping the long commute and waiting room energy of the in-person therapy experience, but you can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor and get timely and thoughtful responses. BetterHelp lets you change counselors at any time, which is really important. It can be really annoying to find the right one for you. So you'll always get a great therapeutic match, and it's more affordable than traditional online counseling with financial aid available. Just head to betterhelp.com/sidenote to get 10% off your first month. That also helps the show by doing that. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of experienced professionals. Again, that's betterhelp.com/sidenote for 10% off your first frickin' month. It's no secret that podcast advertising has taken the marketing landscape by storm. If you're listening to this, you know that. As a host, our audience trusts us to put out great content and to curate sponsors with products or services they'll actually find useful. That's part of why we do host-read ads and why they work so well. But the process of booking these ads can be really confusing, but it's not when you're using Gumball. So before Gumball, things were complicated for us. We just didn't even have ads. Like, honestly, it was just like really confusing. I was like, how do people even make podcasts or make money? But now we use Gumball and it's super easy. Gumball has made it easier for us to book ads so we can focus less on the back end work and just make this podcast for you and enjoy doing that. For podcasters, the key features is that it helps you monetize your show. You can learn about the advertiser beforehand so you can decide yes or no. It's really easy. It's honestly kind of fun. You get to use their back end. It's just like, if you want to start a podcast and you want to start monetizing it, just use Gumball. We're on Gumball, so guess what? You can also buy ads on our show by going to gumball.fm and searching for Side Note by ASAP Science. So if you're a brand, a lot of people just like email us. It's just a lot easier. Just go to gumball.fm and search for Side Note by ASAP Science. Browse shows, discover new advertising options, or list your own podcast on Gumball today.
Study time.
Study time.
Study time. Study time.
Okay. In your studies, what did they say was the ages of midlife? Mine were all over the place.
Oh, to be honest, I didn't specifically look at humans.
Oh, epic. That's so cool.
And so, I mean, midlife, what was it for you? Midlife.
Okay, so one study was 40 to 70. And I was like,
oh, that definitely is not midlife. Like, I mean, maybe 40, but yeah. Not 70.
Yeah, okay. And then the other was mid-30s to 50, which felt more in line with what I thought. And then another one was mid-30s to 65.
Okay, I mean, obviously there's a range.
Yeah, I know. But I kind of was like, what do you literally picture as a midlife?
Well, midlife would be 40. Okay, because, I mean, yeah, if the average person lives to, like, you know, 78 or something.
Yeah. I always pictured a 55-year-old man buying a Porsche, like, doing weird shit. Like, I pictured 50 for some reason. And then when I started to read these variables and when I saw the one was mid-30s, I thought to myself, am I going to be in one soon?
I mean, I think that it's not... midlife obviously is a range. I don't picture it as a 40-year-old person, although I could see it happening then, but you're right. The quintessential idea is also weirdly gendered as a man.
Yeah, yeah.
Who, like, goes through around after 50, maybe once he's, like, hit the peak of his career and is now, like, slowing down and being like, what is the point of life?
There is some science in one of these studies about why it actually is way more common in men.
Okay, well, why don't you kick it off? But actually, before we start, like, are you having a midlife crisis?
No, I don't know. No, I don't think that I am. But, like, everyone at all times is having a bit of a crisis, right?
Well, I am. I'm like...
Wait, you are?
No, I mean, like, I'm always having a crisis. So I'm like...
But, like, okay, but...
I'm like, is everyone not having an existential crisis almost every day?
Yeah, no.
Is that not what happened?
Okay, well, a midlife crisis. So interesting. These studies were all over the place because it's like kind of like...
But since I've been like 25, maybe closer to 30.
But I'm thinking what you're going through is not, based on the science that I'm reading, a midlife crisis.
Oh, I know. But then I just mean talking about crises. Yeah. And I'm just, even outside of this episode,
okay,
I just
well,
need
to
know.
Do you
want to
tell everyone what's your...
No, I'm just like, does everyone sort of have the moment when they're like, what are we doing?
Like, I think
what's
so.
The point of it all?
Yes. And I do feel like it could be starting now because we're like, it is an aging thing. So, okay.
I'm just gonna start. We can talk about your crisis in it because I think it's interesting. But I do think
no, it's not my crisis.
Sorry. wait, but what are you talking about? I thought you were kind of like you're in a crisis.
No, I just mean like I feel like I'm constantly having like some level of existential crisis.
Okay, so what I'm gonna do based on these studies is maybe explain why yours isn't a midlife crisis, but yeah. It's just like maybe a crisis.
Just a crisis.
So okay. These studies talk a lot about midlife crises happening once you've already started a family.
Okay.
The family started, in many ways, the family's maybe even done. You've worked your way up to a pretty substantial, repetitive job. Hmm. Your relationships with people have now changed, which I think is something I kind of can relate to by being in my 30s, but like it's the kid thing hasn't really happened yet. Mm-hmm. And you're dealing with aging parents. So that was like
all those factors.
Those factors were the only thing I could really find as connections between these massive studies that I read. I will say midlife crises are hard to study.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to really define. And I think a lot of people go through a lot of weird shit at all aspects of life.
Yeah.
So one thing I thought was so interesting was that, so during midlife, which this one was the 40 to 70 one, that what they were saying is that you have likely already started to have kids. You've likely already found the career path that you want. Like they sort of left the 20s and 30s to experimenting, figuring it out, mm-hmm. having the ability to figure it out.
Oh my God, are we still in the experimental phase?
Yeah, well, according to these, none of them had early 30s.
My existential crisis is gone.
Yeah, no, none of these were like, and then,
I'm still looking.
So the main thing that was really interesting was like social encounters in your 20s. Your brain and the gray matter is built in a way where you are willing to meet new people. You're willing to go out on a Friday night, like party with strangers and kind of build relationships all over the map, which is healthy and does make sense.
Which is hell.
No, I am relating to that a little bit right now. It just feels like hell a little bit. But it's healthy and it does a lot of things to the gray matter in your brain. Like gray matter, like the way your brain wires. Sorry, the way your brain fires, it also wires. Like you have plasticity. So like in your 20s, you're kind of like, your brain is a very unique thing and you maybe aren't going through what they're thinking is a midlife crisis and they're measuring it by like gray matter. So essentially when you become midlife, you figure out these are the actual people I like.
Yeah.
Like these are the friends and usually it's right. their family.
You're not looking for new ones maybe anymore.
You're fostering and spending a lot more time with less people, mm-hmm. which in one ways is good. But in another way, it's like your brain actually physically changes in midlife because your social interactions are a lot smaller.
Yeah, let's talk about that quickly.
Okay.
What do you feel about that? And like, do you personally think
that? I feel like I relate to that.
I relate to it, but sometimes I'm like, I am sad about it. And like, I'll be the first to admit at a party, like, I do not want to meet new people. Like, I'm like terrified and I don't want to meet anyone new. But there's certain like, things and because part of my existential crisis is like we're in this pandemic and I really am craving like finding some new community, mm-hmm. with no, this is not a statement on any of our friends or anything. Like I love our friends and I do feel like I'm having deeper and better relationships with our friends, but like I miss like joining a musical theater group and meeting a bunch of new people and having fun, and because that's like a safe space for me.
Well, that's interesting because they're kind of saying that midlife crisis might be a reaction to that. It might be like, oh my God, I've been around the same people for so long.
I gotta expand my horizons.
Like now all of a sudden your dad has joined a hockey team and like that might be a small version, or like you see a change in like, I'm doing the stereotypical man thing, or you see a change where like all of a sudden your mom is like, you know what, I need to get out there and start, you know, joining a hockey team. Like there's just like things that you might see your parents do because they're like, holy shit, I just like, my life became so small.
Yeah. But well, also, I mean, it probably lines up with when your kids are finally done being raised.
Yeah. And so one thing they said, though, was that midlife crises were a lot worse for people who didn't build families.
Were worse.
Yeah. So what they were realizing is like, I think they were like, this is a separate study now. This is the one that was saying a different time, 35 to 50. Okay. They were saying that loneliness is like, they were defining a midlife crisis as like a deep feeling of loneliness. And they were saying the reason it's worse for men than women is that women are really good at keeping up their relationships like with friends throughout their like time raising a family. Mm-hmm. Whereas men, I isolate themselves more and have a harder time keeping up relationships. And they think that's why men maybe have to go through more of a midlife crisis more.
Because they're kind of like alone in it.
Yeah. And they were going through the gray matter of like men, like stereotypical fathers and mothers in the same families, and finding that when men didn't have families, they were having like way less social interactions. Mm-hmm. And they were saying the main way to stave off a midlife crisis was to be in a house with more people. Huh. So it's like the more kids and family that you've created, the more social interactions you're having, the less likely your gray matter is going to shift as much, and the less likely you're going to be lonely, and therefore you're the less likely you're going to have what they thought was a midlife crisis.
Huh. I'm having a reaction to that.
Oh, what is
it? I don't know. It's just bizarre. Yeah. Like, and as someone who identifies as a man, and I feel like I can relate to the, like, I want to have more social interaction in my life, but I definitely am more isolating. Like, especially compared between the two of us, like you're much more social.
But I get it. Like, I'm getting older and I'm like, it is hard to... Especially and like in a pandemic. My instinct
on the day is always, I'd rather be home alone.
Yeah.
But I love the idea. Mm-hmm. I mean, we listened to an amazing podcast about happiness. So they're distinguished between liking something and wanting it. Mm-hmm. And like my wanting dopamine desire is to be alone. But like what I want for my life is to have like richer, better relationships. And I read about things like this and hear about how like people who have smaller social circles struggle more as they age. And I am like, I want to have more people in my social circle, but it's hard. It's a lot of work. It's challenging to coordinate amongst, like, you know, lots of people.
And as you get older, I feel like it does become
everyone's
harder.
Busy. In everyone your 20s, everyone's family.
Like, yeah, I'll do that. Yeah. Now it's like, well, will I? Like, we're all gonna get a midlife crisis.
But then I'm like, how do we avoid it?
Well, they said the feeling satisfied with one's friendships was a top trait association in the higher associative regions of the brain for preventing midlife crisis. So consistently working on friendships regardless of your age and having a family, which is so interesting, because I kind of thought that people who had midlife crisis, it was almost like because they had a family and like they built a family, right, and therefore they never like bought the Porsche or whatever. Right. But there, this one study is saying that actually the people in your home and your kids are what's allow your brain to continue to have these interactions.
This is why I want to join a cult.
Yeah. I love how you're so extreme. You're like, I don't really want to hang out with anyone, but like I think I need
to be in a cult.
Yeah, like, that's
no,
what I mean.
I love the idea of a commune because I am really poor at organizing and setting it up. But if I can be put in the situation where it's unavoidable, then I'll reap the benefit of it. You know?
Yeah.
Same with like even why I like to work with a trainer, because I just like won't go to the gym, but I really do enjoy feeling healthy and fit and like exercising and stuff, that I feel like a commune is the structure or archetype for forcing community. It's one of the ways, obviously. Yeah.
It's interesting though to think of a midlife crisis as a lack of relationships with kids, friends, or family, right? Because it's like,
that's not how it
shows. It's not how it shows. And I think it's just me reading these studies, and this has nothing to do with them. This is my personal opinion. Sometimes it feels like the stereotype is a guy buys a car to work on alone. Like it's like you're almost filling in your time with a task that is isolating, when maybe it's like the more knowledge you have to be like, wait, actually maybe it is better if I join a hockey league and not just like, you know, do this thing. I don't know. Like, I actually don't even know enough. And I think we should do this podcast again when we actually, like, are going through
when
it.
When we're, like, 50.
At that point, we're all going to just be, like, cyborgs. And we'll just close our eyes and be like, hey, like, just, like, go live from our, like, literal biochemically, like, chips in our body. But, yeah, like, I kind of always thought it had to do with, like, buying an object or moving your house.
I think that's like the way that the media
portrays
it, for sure, is that it's like these extreme acts that are out of character for someone because they've had a breaking point of realizing I haven't lived my life the way I should or want. And suddenly I'm like, why have I worked this hard and I don't have anything to show for it? Like, maybe I just need to like spend money and do something crazy and suddenly be like, I want to travel the world.
Yeah,
or like let's get a boat and sail. And like it makes... It's that idea of like feeling stuck, and this thing you're buying or doing might get you out of that.
And I do think there's something like material or like buying things that like represent youthness. Mm. And I'm like, it's interesting because I'm like, it would be really smart if I'm in it. I'm able to go, I just need more relationships. And then you go maybe it does involve some amount of money, like maybe traveling like with a group of people or something. Mm-hmm. It would be nice, but like I'm like, I hope I remember this when I maybe get there and just go, okay, Greg, like literally do a pottery class.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, like something that's
so
actually
hard,
cool
though, when
and
you're
like
feeling. And it's hard. I'm sure it's different levels of difficult for different people, but I definitely think it's hard, especially when you're struggling with something, to then be like, I will actually put myself out there more.
Yeah.
It's like so much easier when you're thriving to be like, I'm going to be out there around people. But you're right. It's like, how do you hold on to that? And I have read this. I haven't finished this book, but it's called Friendship, and it's like the science of the impact on friends. And it talks a lot about the like gender divide between how men's social circles just like dwindle so much. And they often rely on their wives in a heterosexual relationship. But if their wives leave them or die, it's like it can be like super isolating.
Or if the wife is actually like, I'm building my friendships without you, because that's also really normal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to continue my friendships. Like, you go continue yours. Like, I'm not going to, like, baby you.
Yeah, I mean,
like, it's sad. Like,
it might
it's
just
hard.
Be cultural as well. Like, men are told to, like, not share their feelings and have need support groups.
Oh, that is
stuff,
that
right?
is fully an issue. Like, that is so an issue. It's like, it's interesting that a midlife crisis has to do with relationships and men, quote unquote, suffer more.
However, we should not pretend that this can't or doesn't happen to women.
Yeah, that's
true. You know,
true.
But you're right that it's, like, stereotypically about men. And that may also be a result of sexism, that men were the ones who are like working and have these different expectations of them, where it was like women were held down. It was just like you didn't necessarily imagine your life to be something different.
Also, the study said that that one of the best ways to stave off a midlife crisis was to have a family. But a lot of women that don't have families are more likely to end up in the stereotypical jobs, which are highly underpaid, but the most valuable in society. And that's why society is patriarchy and misogynist. But like jobs like nursing or teaching, where you actually have really rich relationships with people. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they thought also women who don't have families actually end up having more relationships
because they
their
go
job.
Into spaces like
yeah
that.
Whereas yeah. men end up in more isolating career paths. So like if a man decides not to have a family, they're like, that's the highest like, right. chance of a midlife crisis.
So I want to go into my study, but I'm going to start with a caveat, and this is not to dismiss any of the research you just said. There's lots of research out there, but I did come across the fact that a lot of psychologists do not believe midlife crisis exists.
I kind of found these studies a little wacko. Like I was like actually kind of like, okay, first of all, you can't figure out the ages. Like
right, yeah.
they were kind of, it felt like they, no, I totally don't, that doesn't surprise
me
at all.
That doesn't mean that it can't happen. I think like the largest study that was ever done found only around 24% of men in this study had this moment. But then when they looked at the moment of a midlife crisis, quote unquote, they were so unlinked. So it was like all different versions caused by different things, leading to different emotions,
life's
leading
so
to
complicated.
Different problems.
Yeah.
And so there's no clear, like, I think psychologists are like, if there is a midlife crisis, it should actually happen at the same time.
Yeah.
Or roughly, like, a 30-year window is pretty massive.
Yeah, like, literally, like, if you include all the studies I had, it was from, like, mid-30s up to 70. I'm like, that's pretty much, like, most of your life.
Yeah. However, then I found a thing that was like economists strongly disagree and have been able to find, and maybe that's through
what,
people
like
buying
stuff,
but there's just been studies that say they have seen a measurable decline in happiness at the age of around 40 in a study of 1.3 million people over 51 countries.
Yeah.
So whether that's a midlife crisis is the same as a drop in happiness, that ties into my next study, which actually, or my first study, looked at chimpanzees.
So not macaques.
Not macaques.
Different.
This is chimpanzees and orangutans. So they studied 500 male and female apes across multiple continents. Basically they measured their mood, their enjoyment they gained from socializing, their success at achieving goals. So it was mainly zookeepers all locally.
I was going to be like, it must have been humans like assessing.
It was humans assessing this, but they wouldn't have known. And they wouldn't have known what the study was about. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, here's a survey. We want you to like track these
and like
gorillas.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure these zookeepers have these gorgeous relationships with these animals. They
So basically, like, they were asked a series of questions, not just about the animals' like happiness. Like, it would be tests they would give them. And the final question that the caregivers were asked was like, how would you feel about being that ape for a week?
Oh my God, I love that. They either probably way, over love the, to be the eight.
Over the 500 apes that were measured, they found in middle age while being dipped, and then it climbed again as they moved into old age. So there was this pattern that it, like, your well-being starts high, like self-proclaimed. Obviously, in this case, it's like measured by someone watching, and then it dips in middle age, and then it goes back up, is what they found in the animals. And to wow. be clear, apes in captivity live to around 50 plus years old. So
what significant. Was their midlife age?
So they said the lowest well-being occurred at 28 for chimps and 35 for orangutans.
Okay.
And then they, in this study, were like, that roughly corresponds to midlife in humans.
Yeah.
Like, as in probably a like little 50. Older. Yeah, because humans live for like a bit longer.
I love that. That's a funny way to do it.
Yeah.
That's a really yeah. funny way to try and be like,
and just be like, maybe there's like an evolution, maybe there's a physiological change in our bodies, or maybe we've been alive long enough that things feel a little more monotonous, but then in older age, we start to accept that's just the way it is.
Yeah, like, or you're like, I'm running out of time, I need to like, you know, life's beautiful.
Yeah.
Or also, you would definitely figure shit out.
But then there are some heavy criticism lofted at this study as well.
Yeah, it like, is
some psychologists being like, how... Like, A, most other research doesn't show a significant effect. And it's like, apes, we know they don't think as far. Like, humans are so unique because we think really far ahead. So
yeah.
what are the apes sad about?
I love learning about animal brains. And it's like, they live in the present. Like, animals yeah. are so good at mindfulness and meditation. That's all they do.
That's like
and
all Ernie, our dog, does.
All they
I look at him and I'm just like, you're just happy all the time.
Because he's in the moment. Like, everyone's just like, be in the moment, be in the moment. I'm like, we're just these psycho animals that are always thinking about the future. We're really some of the few, like, mammals on Earth that do that. That are able to deeply blessing remember the past and deeply think about the future. It's amazing, but it's like so funny that in this day and age, everyone's like, don't, no, ignore those things and just live in the moment. And it's like, that's really hard. And that's what every animal does. I like know. A squirrel knows
because they don't
what's
have
up.
A construct around them, like telling them to get a job. Like Ernie just has us working. He
yeah,
doesn't
Mitch,
think about anything.
Okay, so Mitch.
Yes.
Do you think you're in a midlife crisis? Like, do you, what do you, like, what, like, you felt good before?
It's not, like, a midlife crisis, but we've been doing the same job for a really long time.
Yeah.
And I think it is just sort of a, there's a point at which you're kind of like, what? Like, I'm not really, where, I think for me, sometimes it's, like, a lack of progress, which is, like, arbitrary and measured by myself. But mm-hmm. it's, like, when you do something for so long, you get good enough at it that you don't really have to push yourself anymore. We're like in this stage where like it is what it is. We get people to watch videos and share education and it's amazing, but it's like that hedonic adaptation. It's mm-hmm. like if you suddenly get a job that gives you a bunch more money, it will feel good at first. But then if you stay at that amount, then you sort of go like, it just kind of goes away till it's totally normal.
Yeah.
And so I feel like maybe that's where I'm at. That's the one side of it. The other side is sort of like the existential question. And this comes from privilege of being like, oh, we've been able to feel really stable financially, luckily for our job, and have had lots of experiences that I am like, what else is there?
Like in general, in the universe for your life.
And like what are we doing this all for? Like, why are we all working so hard to get money and be successful? And like, what's the point of it? I get the point is for a lot of people to just survive as well, but we're like beyond the just survival thing because we are like lucky enough to have money and a house and like not have to worry about day to day. Like I think in some ways, if you have to be stressed about money every day, then that's what your focus is on.
Girl, you need a gratitude journal, hun.
I guess, and I'm not saying...
Not to say that that's...
I'm not saying...
Anything,
no, but
I'm like,
a lot of research shows
there,
that
yeah.
for sure. Like I took that happiness course. And that was one of
oh,
the
with
things.
Pushkin, the podcast girl. What's her name?
Yeah, Lori Santos.
I just always
her
know
name
she,
is
she,
not Pushkin.
No, but she always is on her podcast. Goes Pushkin.
I think that's a network of podcasts.
Oh well, sounds like her voice. But yeah, I do think that's really interesting because I mean, I don't know. Like that's hard.
It is just like I think.
That's
I
hard.
Think it's like a middle phase for me, not to midlife crisis. Hello, but it's like the transition between. Learning new ideas and then actually believing them. And I think I am really interested in like philosophy and Buddhism. I don't study those things, obviously, but I listen to a lot of people talk about them and they kind of make you question what we're all doing and what makes us happy and why it will, like, the things that give us stress. And it's like, why should that? And I'm in the phase where I, like, I know the things that are interesting and they're just making me, like, critically evaluate my life, which makes me feel really weird.
Instead Whoa, so like you're at learning the
stage where I'm, like, able to, like, feel like I've moved past that.
So you're learning about, like, Buddhism and, like, living in the present, and that, like, the things that you thought mattered, like, what are the things that Buddhism's, like, kind of attacking in your personality? I know, well, that sounds intense.
It's but. Like the existence of the self, but also that, like, your suffering comes from your clinging to what you want things to be and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That, like, I don't know. Like, obviously, it's like goes back to that hedonic treadmill, and you always want more, and you always want more, and you think, oh, if I just get this, if we just get X in our life or on social media, when we reach that milestone, it's going to feel so good.
Huh. So then you're like,
there, and then you just, I'm so used to that treadmill now. Of now, I'm even like, I know I'm not going to feel good when I get those things that we're trying to get.
So is it making you complacent and then not want to do anything? And then that makes you feel bad?
Well, I don't know. I think, like, I've heard a lot of people talk about finding personal gratification from, like, helping others and doing things that are more altruistic.
Yeah.
And I guess I feel like our job is, in some ways, like, I've always felt good about sharing and being an educational channel and teaching science. But I think because it's on the internet, and I think in the last 2 years being in a pandemic, it's so isolated that I don't know that I really feel like we're helping people.
That's so funny. You know what I mean? I really think that maybe the only reason I'm able to do this and feel that less is because I actually think what we're doing matters. Like, for example, I'm like, we made a video that taught people what the mRNA vaccine does, and it has 10 million views.
Mm.
Like, I'm like, that to me is like, I could only imagine as a kid, that's like the most incredible freaking thing I would be able to do with my life. I also always wanted to be a science teacher, so maybe it's easier for me because it's like, that is just being a science teacher, like, on steroids. Or it's easier to feel like that actually made a difference.
But I guess,
do you think, like, about that video?
Yeah, but I feel pretty detached because, like, it's like the internet. Things just go around, and I don't think about it every day.
But people clearly use that video to get the vaccine.
Yeah, that's true. Like, I feel good about that when I think about it, but I don't think about it that often. But then there's another part of me, like, that steps out, and it's like, what's that even for? Like, of course, I understand we're living in the moment, and we're like, we want to support and encourage people to get vaccines, we want to, like, fight climate change, we want to do all these things, but, like, in the grand scheme,
now you
of
go
it,
to, like, the universe scale.
Yeah, sometimes I'm like, we're literally in this blip. Oh, Ernie's barking, sorry. We're in this blip of time that's so specific to ourselves, but, like, humans have been existing for 100,000 years. Like, we're just like, I don't know. Sometimes I just, like, see the large scale and I'm like, what are we freaking out about anything for?
Yeah.
But I'm still freaking out.
Yeah, because that's so interesting, because I feel like I zoom out to the universe, you know, the, like, the little blip that is our lives, even this existence on Earth, like, every aspect of everyone's life, whether you're, like, you know, Barack Obama or, like, someone else, like, you act like there is a meaninglessness to that only when I'm really stressed. Like, I don't go there when I'm feeling like, I use it as a coping mechanism, but you're right. It could easily be used to then just be like, actually, I don't want to do anything. And
it's,
like,
not that it
matters.
Makes me want to do nothing, but it makes me feel like I'm trying to find, like, and intellectualize a reason for it.
Yeah.
And I think what will happen as I continue on this journey, especially, like, as I actually feel like I understand more and more what some of these, like, philosophies are teaching, is, like, you can't do that.
You can't,
like,
do what?
Like, you actually can't. There's not a reason or an answer, like, to things.
Oh, yeah. So then you can't even expect to be looking
so stop,
for it?
Yeah, stop worrying about it. Like, I'm in the stage where I'm like, there's no reason. Yeah. What is it? If I don't find it, it's meaningless.
Yeah.
And then the real answer is like, well, it is meaningless. So just, like,
so, like, go back
don't
to
worry. I don't really know. I don't know. I just, like, am in that weird phase right now.
No, it's really interesting. Like, I do think there's something so interesting, because it's like, yeah, like, I'll come home and Mitch will be, like, blasting, like, Alan Watts, like, there, your finger is just meant to be the same. And, like, you really put a lot of, like, energy.
What you just
or it's just like,
what
it's like,
did
it's
you
like,
just
it's
say?
It's like, there's there no difference finger. Between the tip of your finger and the air beside it. You are the universe, and the universe is you. And it's like, It's true. Like, those things are all beautiful and interesting, but it's like so funny to think that if you're not at a certain point, it could also maybe like hinder a little bit. Like, any aspect of growth, there's always like an issue.
There's like this beginning growing stage where sometimes it's harder.
Yeah. Like therapy, when you start to learn about yourself, you're like, I hate myself.
Yeah. And it risks, like, it risks you feeling like really sad. Or even working out, you're like, I am in physical pain.
Yeah.
But then it's stage that you start to be like, now I feel better. But when you first start working out, it like hurts.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe I'm just a little bit in that where I'm like, clinging on to these ideas too strongly and looking at them in a way that's like I've never really thought about, and it's like making me be like, holy shit, what is the point of anything?
But I do think that is kind of midlife crisis vibes. I know we kind of just found out that many psychologists agree and the studies I've read were really bunky ass, and that's not even a real thing maybe, but I think a lot of crises in general are linked to this thing we're told, which is like success matters. Literally now we live in this disgusting, in my opinion, social media world where it's like visibility and clicks and like it's all linked to like this quote unquote success, that if you just buy into that fully, it's going to be really stressful, but you might be like, this is what life's about. And then all of a sudden you have a lot of like purpose, even though it's obviously, we know, like really, like you're going to burn out. It's going to be really depressing and hard. You have maybe like uniquely had a lot of quote unquote success in that world. And now you have to reckon with the fact that it's like not meaningful, whereas a lot of people might be searching for that for a long time,
and find then it out later,
like, maybe get it, maybe you are having an early midlife crisis because you got a lot of the success and things early. The family thing is interesting because like you don't have a family. Like, it'd be interesting for you to have all this and a family at the age of 33 and like wonder if you feel the same way, or if really what the science says is a family can like really stave off these issues. Because that actually, weirdly, I don't know because I don't have kids, but I could imagine that hijacks your neurons and the circuitry of your brain to be like, this is what matters.
Yeah.
Because I now have...
And almost just distracts you too, because you don't have time to like stress about the other stuff, because you're like, I have to take care of this kid.
And you're actually probably feeling a love for a thing that I can't even really fathom. I don't know, like, if that's true. Like, I know some people are like, actually, like, I don't have issues with having kids. But like yesterday, that person on that podcast about happiness said the only thing she has not hedonically adapted to is hugging her kid.
Cuddling, yeah.
Yeah, like that's really interesting. That makes
sense. And she was like, because your kids are always changing. So like you're never getting used to them because they adapt. And all, like every month your kid's different.
Yeah, and even every time you hug your kid. 14
to 16 to 18 is like, kind of recall for myself, like so distinctly different ages.
And every time you hug your kid, you're hugging them at a different stage where they're maybe hugging you because they want to, or
I never also never adapt to hugging and cuddling or any like my dog.
Yeah, that's true. Me neither. That's so maybe.
But I'm sure it will be even stronger feelings for a kid when you're just like, oh my god, I love this thing so much.
It's so intense. But yeah, no, you're definitely like on like, you're thinking deeply about things, which is good.
And but sometimes it's not. But that's where I also realize, like, also often what Buddhism or these philosophers are talking about is the acknowledgement that, like the advantage of being human from an evolutionary standpoint is that we're so smart. We were able to socialize in groups and like come together and do these amazing things. And the mental suffering is the trade-off, like that we can think so far in advance and be anxious about things that might never happen and be stressed about like concepts versus just like a literal lion. Like Ernie can't be stressed out by a concept. But like I can be stressed out by this like virtual world of the internet and what it means to have like not, I don't know, you know what I mean? Like a certain amount of people watching or liking or commenting or all those things. And so
I'm life like, is suffering.
Will that be in 10
Isn't
years?
Isn't that a Buddhist thing? Life is suffering.
Yeah, that's the whole
thing. I kind of find that really comforting sometimes.
Yeah.
Just like life is suffering, and then you're like, okay, well, it's not that bad. You know what I mean? Like,
and I don't want to suffer.
Like, it's an intense
I'm also like
thing
a really big baby when it comes to pain, and I'm like, maybe it's linked, and I'm just like a big baby when it comes to any kind of suffering.
Like, you're a big, oh my God.
You know what I mean? How they sometimes say emotional pain isn't actually not that different from physical, and people sometimes regulate emotional pain through painkillers. Like, you can, they're like actually linked where like ibuprofen, and I'm not recommending this to anyone, but studies have said like ibuprofen can make people feel less emotional. That maybe I'm just like really sensitive to pain and really sensitive to like emotional turmoil.
Yeah. No, and you're also, you have like an extreme personality. Like, there's something like, it's like you're, I could see you getting so extremely into Buddhism that you're actually like, I don't want to work ever again. Do you know what I mean? Whereas it's like, Or you could take those teachings and understand right, you have to work. Yeah. Or like, I know you'll get there, but you're just like a funny person who I've seen in
no,
your
truly,
life.
No, truly. I'm like,
really intensely.
The other day I asked my mom if she wanted to like travel to India, and I was like, and then she would leave and I would just like go into an ashram for a year and just like stay there.
Yeah. Like, it's like, you're either literally doing that or you're like a capitalist pig who like is gonna like,
take over the world.
Like, have the most success financially in the world. Like, it's like so funny. You're like, I'm either or, and anything it's in between
not,
is a failure.
Anyone else feel that?
I think a lot of people feel that. You,
the like dichotomous living.
But you have is, you just have an interesting, like, since the time I've known you, you felt like you've always been obsessed with this sort of like Buddhist Gandhi thing. That's always been a part of you, right?
Yeah.
But then there's also always been this part of you that's been like, I'm gonna fucking kill it. Like, I'm going to be successful. Like, I'm gonna be the really good at school.
Yeah.
Like, you were Oliver. Like, I know that, like, that's like maybe a small portion of your life, but I really think that probably had a really big impact on your development. Like, you were a really successful kid. Mm-hmm. Like, you were like a child star. You know what I mean? That's like a serious thing. Like, a lot of child stars like maybe suffer with similar things. Whereas like, I was a dumbass in grade 9, like, who like picked my nose and was like, I don't know, maybe I'll be a teacher. You know what I mean? Like, that's probably made it a little bit like, I didn't have high ambitions for myself.
Like, in that sense. Yeah.
Whereas I feel like you always did. And I think your parents are like, they really fostered like your sister. So like, you and your sister are ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that word ambitious is interesting.
Cause yeah, I would struggle to have. And I wonder though, like, I feel like a lot of people do feel like this, but maybe not. Like, I struggled to have the same thing for a long period of time. Yeah. Even if when I, and that means like a job in this case, like any job I've had that I've loved at first, eventually I start, if it doesn't evolve and change enough, I feel like it shocks me that some people can just be like, yeah, I'm just comfortable and I don't need to make my life any different now.
Well, they're working to live, probably, right?
Maybe. And that might be the truth, but some people are just more like comfortable.
Yeah.
Like, can be like, here's my salary. It's enough for me to live, to have my family, to whatever. And I'm just going to do that job the rest of my life. And that's, and a lot of people aren't like that.
Then they have a midlife crisis. I'm kidding.
Maybe. But I think there's the other side. And I know lots of people who are similar to this, where it's like, I can't just like do the same thing forever. Like, I want to constantly feel like I'm growing and progressing.
Me too.
And
I think, yeah.
But maybe I'm too far on one extreme.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people maybe feel that too, but maybe their job isn't giving them the option. They know that's like how they're going to feel financially stable. So they're looking to outside of their job for growth.
Mm-hmm. Like, get it there.
There's so many ways you can feel growth that have nothing to do with your job, but you're in a really interesting job where whatever you do defines it. Like, no, there's no one telling you what to do. So it's up to you to figure out what it is. And therefore, like, you can still be really ambitious and you can still do all this stuff, but then Buddhism's like, but why? Like, just don't. Or like,
it's not saying don't, but it's just
but it's questioning,
cling
like,
to those ideas so strongly, because that's actually what brings suffering when you can't get that.
And you were probably really motivated by them before like, understanding Buddhism.
Even like creating Aesop Science was like part of that. It was like exciting, and I wanted to create something like this with you that would like affect people and like be seen by lots of people and educate people, and like, to whatever degree that's worked, obviously it's had an impact. Like, we have lots of videos with many people watching them, so it's just like, is that bad? It's trying to like measure, like, obviously I feel positive about that in one place, but on the other hand, that's the result of a behavior and mentality that's maybe actually not that positive.
Wow.
Right? Like, to have had that much motivation and cared and be driven by views and subscribers and money and stuff.
I feel so stupid and dumb beside you. I'm like, oh. I'm
wait,
like,
what?
No, I'm just like, you're thinking about all this stuff so deeply, and I'm just like, I make video about saying.
That's like, not true.
No, I'm just like, wow, okay, whoa, true. Now I'm like, oh my God, okay. Well, am I having a midlife crisis?
No, because I think you're more well-balanced as a human being.
Oh, okay. I am a Libra.
Like, you're not as extreme.
I'm a Libra.
I don't know.
Right? Doesn't that know what that means?
I don't know what that means
either, but I know it's a scale.
It's not real.
But I know it's a scale.
Do we have a podcast on that already?
No, astrology already. Okay. Oh my God, are you kidding? That one's going to be intense. Astrology is so intense these days.
I'm going to end with one last thing that's going to like impact you. It was a fun little side fact study related to midlife crisis. And now, as we said, midlife crisis might not be real, but this other study found that marijuana use was associated with a higher risk of social and financial midlife crisis.
Oh, I'm in for a big toasty one.
So, but it said that people, I'm trying to find the number. It was
I'm going to have a bigger.
Four or more days a week maybe was the number.
Oh, there's a Tesla Model 3 coming after your
Tivoli
Model 3.
But they studied like 1,000 people from birth to age 38, and that's how they started finding like the people who had...
Maybe your midlife crisis was to buy a Tivoli Model 3, and because I have smoked so much weed, mine's going to be, or a eat Tesla so much Model weed, 3. A Tesla Model 3. I'm going to go way past the like radio clock.
Maybe, yeah, we'll find out.
No, I'm trying to... I've been really good with marijuana recently. I rewatched my own video about what happens when you quit weed. And I literally watched the video I made about quitting weed in order to like help myself. And I'm like, this is insane. It's like, you're telling your, you've made this to tell
that
yourself.
That makes sense. So that going back to that happiness lab, like she's Laurie Santos, who's a professor at, I think it's, I forget which
Yale or something.
One of those Ivy League. But she always is like, you'd think that I'm like the happiness researcher. I would like have figured it all out. But she's constantly having to like remind herself.
Yeah. And that's
go
also,
through those struggles.
That other psychologist was saying, she was like, I study happiness. And it's just sort of like whatever chapter I'm writing, I'm doing well.
Yeah.
While I'm writing it, it'll be like,
you're like,
be nice to others.
Day.
And then she like, for like, while she writes that chapter for months, she's nice to others. And then it's like, that's interesting because I feel like that with Aesop Science. Like I actually really limited how much weed I was consuming when I was learning about how addictive it is and what happens when you try and quit. And now I'm having to rewatch that in order to deal with it now. And now I'm making one about what happens when you quit porn and I haven't watched porn.
Right.
But it's like I'm pretty sure I'm going to make one in the future and I'm going to forget and be like, shit, I have to remember to not watch porn.
Yeah.
So it's cool. It's cool.
Yeah, it is true. Just like you come in and out of things.
Yeah. That's
but
okay.
I'm just like, how do you see it from the outside?
Yeah.
Like,
I don't know.
Like we were listening to that podcast the other day, I kind of had a moment of realization where I was like, you just. Like it was a reminder that hedonic adaptation is a thing, the hedonic treadmill, where it's like you think you want something until you get it. Then you like it for a bit, but even if it's your PhD and like, and those things, I'm not saying any of those things are bad. Like it doesn't even have to be a negative thing.
Okay. That's that thing that we're going to end. And everyone's like, everyone's just like listening, being like, these people are truly like going through something. But the gratitude journal, I must say, I'm the type of person that I feel like every self-help / science YouTuber, whatever, they're just like, gratitude journal. And it's like annoying kind of. I kind of roll my eyes at it. But I will say it is the only tangible thing that's ever been explained to me to somewhat help deal with the hedonic adaptation that is life. Because it's like you think about the thing that if you didn't have, you'd be sad you missed it. And I do it every I've been doing it every morning for like 7 months. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I'm in a bad place. Like, I think I'm lucky to be quite a happy person, but I'm like, it is. Sometimes they're so lazy and I'm just like looking. I'm like, I'm grateful for the coffee mug in front of me. Like, it's like, I'm like bullshitting it just to get it done.
Yeah.
But then other times I'm like, oh my God. Like, I actually really now care about that thing that I never would have cared about because it's just there and I bought it years ago and it's meaningless, but it's actually meaningful.
Yeah.
So it's like,
no, I do think that is a good thing to do. My only caveat and my frustration is like there's a million things. It's like I've seen a classic TikToks that make jokes where it's like after I do my 1 hour of exercise, my 30 minutes of meditation, my 30 minutes of gratitude journaling, my whatever. It's like there's all and then like.
Yeah, it's so funny. Now I'm ready to live life. And it's like also you privileged. Like
you've run out of time.
Yeah, exactly. You're so privileged that you can do that. That's why you're appreciative.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'm literally just saying this thing that I do in the morning that takes 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Like I actually only do 6 things.
Yeah.
Right. That actually takes,
I did it for a little bit. Seconds. I just like, I'm so bad at morning journaling. I don't like it, but maybe I should try again. Like even like morning pages and stuff I've like started and then it's like every 3 months I do one.
Yeah, no, that's funny.
Everyone's different, okay? Yeah. And some of us are just bound to struggle for the rest of our lives.
Life is suffering. Buddhism. Okay, bye.
Oh my gosh.
That was crazy.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Bye.
Yeah, bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.